Hi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. It's been 3 whole weeks.
It has been. We said 2 weeks last time, but we forgot there were 3 Tuesdays in December or something.
Yeah, it's a time dilation principle. You'll have to consult Albert Einstein for the
time
details.
Time dilation. Oh, using big words already? Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So, did you say your name?
Hi, everybody. My name's Robert Winters.
Yeah, it's right on the screen. Mine's Judith Nathan.
All right. So anyway, it's welcome to the new year. There's a lot of hope and optimism. You know, vaccines on the way, and 2020 sucks by all accounts. Yeah. I've never heard anyone say otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not 100% feeling all uplifted, like we're out of anything yet.
It just feels like we're under the dark.
No,
we're
cloud,
going into the darkness physically,
The vaccine distribution is a great sign of hope.
Yeah.
And we're not heading into we will soon not be heading into the winter. Eventually, we'll be heading out of the winter, which also will help.
And it actually gets lighter every day. People don't realize. So you kind of look for that every second. It gets lighter.
You know, one of the ideas that I've been sort of floating to a few people, sort of in the political arena, but otherwise too, is that, you know, I wasn't around for the end of World War II. Not that old, Vietnam War didn't end sort of like with Victory Day or anything like that.
No, it's bad.
But there is a kind of a phenomenon when a war is over, where people feel some level of elation, and people sort of they'll take on a sense of promise and hope and positivity, So the way I've been saying it to people, and I really do believe this, is that in a sense we'll be coming to the end of two wars. One in 15 days, we lose an insane president.
God.
And it will feel like a cloud has been lifted for many of us. And then with a vaccine in the pipeline, hopefully at some point during the year 2021, another big cloud will be lifted. And I kind of just have an intuitive sense that there may be, don't be shocked if there's a lot of people feeling awfully good later this year.
But didn't you feel that the Saturday when they declared him the winner, the Saturday after?
Yeah, it was
people
a brief,
were beeping horns. I don't know. I thought it was a relief. No, it was like it was something had just been.
That's right. It was a celebration. Yeah. But the thing is, that's different than sort of everybody planning and investing and making good things happen. And
I wish I was as hopeful as you, because all I can see is that there's going to be armed insurrection on tomorrow. They've got the National Guard has now been called into D.C.
You know, I never saw that
inauguration.
Sort of the day.
Can you imagine what's going to happen at the inauguration? Because these people have guns. I'm sorry. I hate to say these people, but the ones that are they have guns.
I've sort of come to look at a lot of this stuff as children who don't grow up. When they were little kids, they liked to play army, and they still like to play army. You know, whether they're sort of trying to have a revolution.
Talk about men by any chance? Here?
It is a male thing. It is really a male thing. I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize for my entire gender. Yeah. And people
well, there
need
are
to grow
lots
up
of
and
women
get over it.
Yeah, lots of women are carrying guns now because they go along.
I know. But I'll tell you, it has been absolutely surreal. I mean, I know this is Cambridge Inside Out. We should really focus more on local things, but it has just been surreal to see some of these things playing out.
I know, but I
still keep, when people get them, I will still stand by my feeling that I felt really for years, which is that people should not have allowed this man to get into their head as much as they did.
But you know what? He was around for years before that, even though I didn't watch The Apprentice and you probably didn't watch it.
Never
that
once.
That man has been out there for years.
I know.
People loved him, I know.
But the thing is that it's like everybody I know, whether it doesn't matter what political party or political persuasion you have, they've basically been reacting to this man for 4 years.
Well, he just constantly is throwing out, you know, bombs every day, tweeting.
I know. But, you know, it's like Saturday Night Live did last month, or maybe it was it might have been right the week before the election. They did a spoof where they were basically talking about, oh, it's going to be so great when he's gone. But then they all went, oh, but what do we do then? Oh my God, I'll have to pay attention to my family. Oh my God, all of these other things, you know.
And life goes back to somewhat normalcy, and people. Yeah. It's. I hope.
But
that not going to go away. But just.
I know. But will the? You know, will CNN or? Oh, I know it. I don't know. I'm not going to even speak to Fox News, but CNN actually talk about things other than what Trump said today?
Oh, actually, they do. Do you watch CNN a lot?
A pretty fair amount.
I watch MSNBC more because they don't care about having opposing viewpoints.
So good. I like that. Yes.
CNN has that Rick Santorum, and I can't stand it.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know.
I have to say though, you know, in spite of my misgivings about the man, nothing in my mind comes close to what I was seeing these last couple of days with this phone call.
Oh my God! Do you believe
in
that?
Georgia.
Do you
pretty
believe
much
that?
Just explicitly saying, get me these votes. You know, I mean, I've been involved in election related things for some time and involved even in choosing the election hardware that we use in Cambridge, 20 some odd years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think about these things. I think about ballot custody issues, chain of custody, verifiable ballots. Yeah. I think about all of these things here and all the safeguards that are necessary and the things you can and cannot do. For example, you
recalculate.
There is a legitimate issue about when can you change the rules governing an election.
Okay.
So, for example, in normal times, if you were going to allow early voting, you normally wouldn't change to allow that a week before the election or very soon before the election, because even how people design their campaigns are somewhat guided by what the rules are. So if you start changing the rules late in the game, that's kind of wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of a principle you don't mess with here. So you could, if I was on the Republican side and I wanted to argue that because of the pandemic, that there were some rules change, you could at least make an intellectual argument. But that's not the argument they're making, you know? And that phone call, just beyond the pale.
So glad that they recorded it. You know, he apparently tried calling them 18 times.
Well, actually, I read one place today that they thought it was a crank call. And then only on the 19th, they realized it really was the guy.
Yeah.
So that's I like the notion.
And he was on the phone an hour.
And just, and so explicitly pressuring election.
Oh my God.
Tally.
Find me those 11,780 votes. One more than we have.
My greatest wish is simply in 15 days from now to not hear from him very much anymore. Of course, he'll simply do otherwise. I just don't want to hear from him anymore.
He's going to have own network or something.
But and in fact, if that means don't prosecute him for anything, that would be a fine deal for me. Just get him out of here.
New York will,
sure. But you know, honestly, when I heard this pressuring election officials, I said, throw the book at him for that.
Yeah, I mean,
that is so off the charts.
Unbelievable. He probably figured he's nothing to lose because he knows he's going to have to leave anyway. So. It just confirms if you needed confirmation, if you didn't believe it now, then you're lost. Sorry.
Right. exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still hopeful though. I'm going to say that.
I want to believe that.
I think that, so much of this is like a psychosis, like mass insanity
for four years.
But I actually have a lot of faith in Joe Biden, and just as a human being, and some of the people around him.
Absolutely.
He'll find a way to kind of reach across the aisle. I mean, a lot of people today, because today is the Georgia primary, right?
Oh, it's going. I have CNN on in the background.
Yeah, yeah. And, a lot of people are putting a lot of stock in the importance of Democrats winning both seats. I personally don't think of that. That's not so as important as people may think.
Yes.
In fact, there is a kind of a downside to it as well.
No, I'd like them to get one.
I think actually that might be a good message for the country too. But you know, the first off, you know, if the Democrats win both seats, then the Democrats are just going to fight amongst themselves. You know, the question is it possible? Does Biden and the people around him have the force of conscience and personality to actually be able to pick up the phone and go, Mitch, we got to talk. Yeah. Let's work something out.
Is Mitch going to want to pick up the phone because he's still in control? But
Understanding is that Biden and McConnell, they were both
senators. They have a long history.
They have a history together. So I actually, again, maybe I'm, you know, Pollyanna.
I think you're right.
I'm hopeful.
Because I think a lot of the Republicans that kind of were not happy at all with the Trumpism, they would feel more entitled to kind of, well, wait a minute, Mitch, you know what I'm saying? I think Mitch McConnell knows that. He doesn't have that majority anymore.
Right, exactly. So,
and he's been backing away from it for a while.
I know it. So, you know, this is not sports, folks. No. This is about running a country. It's not about always about winning this race or that race. It's like, how do we get to a better place? Yeah. And, you know, and I just think there are a lot of ways to do so.
And we don't have to worry about the Patriots. They're out.
That's right.
They're not in the playoffs.
By the way, just a little bit of an update on the, I'm getting into this a little too early.
It's
only January, but you know, for the municipal elections, nothing about school committee. That's way beyond me for now. But you know, I've been kind of looking. Spent some time this morning looking over the campaign finance reports to see if any new candidates have emerged and whatever.
I looked at your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of difficult to read it. We do know that there are three incumbent city councilors who are pretty aggressively raising money and have declared themselves. Dennis Carlone, Quentin Zondervan. He may not have made a formal declaration, but to me, when you do a major fundraiser for thousands and thousands of dollars, that is a declaration. I just get it from the state, from the Office of Campaign.
But I just looked at your thing today. I didn't see his name on the declared.
He hasn't made a formal declaration.
But you can see it on your
aggressive app. Fundraising. Okay. You don't have any debts. that is a declaration. Itself. So I am going to unofficially just say it's Zondervan, Carlone, and Mark McGovern are the absolute incumbents who are McGovern especially is heard. He's raised more than twice as much as anybody else.
Yeah.
So they're gung ho for this. There's also some actual fundraising for Dana Bullister.
Yeah.
Tania Hicks, actually, I saw some serious money coming in. Franz Pierre, who I believe works at Margaret Fuller House, now has, you know, it's not raised a lot of money, but you know, he's just filing bank reports.
Okay.
So these are all means they are real candidates. Joe McGuirk is also, you know, getting bank reports now. Okay. So those are the four newly filed candidates. There are some other candidates who were around in the past who I was looking around today, and you could see that there was financial activity in their campaign accounts relatively late in the year in 2020. So for example, first off, Craig Kelly still has a huge amount of money in his bank account.
Oh, he does. Oh.
Yeah. So the thing is that I actually was walking the other day and his wife came bicycling by and I said, is Craig running? And she disappeared into the distance. I didn't hear a response.
Right.
But the thing is that, you know, let's not discount the possibility that Craig Kelly may reemerge as a candidate.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you, since you know all things about this, has there ever been a candidate that lost either an incumbent or somebody new that ran again and won?
Yes. Danny Clinton. Certainly on the school committee, Mark McGovern.
Okay.
Also on the school committee, Freddie Fantini. He actually lost one time.
The school committee I know more so than the city council.
Right. But so I think on the city council, the answer is yes.
Really?
Well, Danny Clinton, I think, right?
Yeah, but that's going back like 30 years.
Yeah, in relative, because usually, I think Let's see, did Al Vallucci leave and come back? I'm not
sure. I don't know. Now you're talking like
It's been a while, but usually it's when people leave. You know, the power of incumbency is that such that if you're an incumbent, chances are you get reelected, and if you are not reelected, it usually means your star is fading. I think this 2019 was something of an anomalous year.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig Kelly, for example, got more votes than he had ever gotten and lost.
You mean number one votes.
Number one votes and lost. Right. So I have to view that as a kind of, a sign of the future. You know, he's a very strong, viable candidate if he chooses to do so.
I would love him to run.
Other people who ran last time who are, I would consider viable, but a lot of this also depends on whether incumbents, if there are any vacancies.
We don't know right now if there would be.
One person who has not said yay or nay about running again would be Nicola Williams. She was a strong candidate. You know, our friend Patrick Barrett is probably going to be a candidate, which would be, it's debatable, but, you know, considering the fact that he's written more zoning than any of the incumbents.
I know, but I think we've talked, I mean, there would be things he couldn't do as a counselor that he can do now.
Yes. You know,
new developments. It'd be like Trump. I mean, Trump could care less, but, you know, Pat, he couldn't engage in development. He couldn't engage in certain things.
That's not true.
No, but he'd have to divorce himself from certain things.
Absolutely true. Yes. Yeah. But the thing is, I still think it's a manageable thing, you know. So, but I think it's important to sort of keep that in mind. One other person who was a candidate, not last time around, but the time before, was Sam Gebru. Was moving quite a bit of money around in his bank account, but that may have been to pay off old debts. I don't even know.
True.
But I don't know what he's up to, but I'm not going to write him off. Think he's another person who possibly could come back. Theodore Asciatis, who is working, I think, is sort of the exec director of Cambridge Local First, is still rumored. It's in rumor stage as a possible candidate.
Is she a long-term Cambridge person? Not that you have to be, but I just
long enough, Another person who I don't really know that much about was Risa Mednick, who was a candidate last year.
Committee.
No.
She was the city council. That's
Sort of like a kind of a climate change, but also kind of glommed onto the ABC crowd. I don't think she did super well, but the thing is, she does still, she retains her bank account with a piece of change in there. Another person was Burhan Azim, who was sort of like, in a sense, the runner-up amongst the ABC crowds. And I don't know what's become of him.
Kind of like a G-Van, a little bit.
Maybe so. You know, the thing is, you know, and I am just going to make a personal observation about all candidates is that, to me, I would rather see if a person who's a candidate and doesn't win, they shouldn't just disappear until the next election.
That they should have been doing things.
Yeah,
they
that's not sending a particularly good sign to me personally.
Yeah, whereas like someone, like you just said, Nicola Williams, she goes does public comment. She's involved a lot. So she did not go silent. Yes.
Exactly. So, and the thing is, it's not always just a matter of sort of being in the public eye. Are you actively involved in doing things around town?
Well, what would you say then about some of those new names?
Well, for example, Theodore Sciatis working with Cambridge Local
First. Well, that one I know, but what about Joe McQuirk? What has he done that?
I don't know enough about him. You know, I'm looking forward to meeting him, but I don't know enough about him. But I think my understanding from just a very short email interchange with him was that, you know, he feels there are certain voices in the city are not being heard.
I don't think I've ever heard his, maybe he has done public comment. The name somewhat sounds familiar.
I don't know. The thing is, like I used to say that when people look about community groups, they always think about community groups as neighborhood associations and political groups and whatever. Whereas if you were from East Cambridge, just being involved in you know, a local church, you know, being, you know, driving the community there, or, you know, Sal DiDomenico's parents were putting together the festivals down in East Cambridge.
Right, but usually you very community hear of that and stuff. I mean,
it might, even if it's just in the neighborhood. So
yeah.
So I might not know about what people are actually involved in, and they may actually be very involved in certain communities, you know,
I don't know. I tend to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just would, you know, I just want to see people kind of proving themselves a little bit, you know?
Right. Right.
You know, and I don't know, maybe that's a, take that, if you're any candidates are watching, take that as a suggestion, you know, between now and November, kind of, you know, get out there, will you?
All
right. Yeah. 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 So anyway, so that's from national political or the national political
world. Right. So just to let and it is election night in Georgia, as we say today.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I don't know whether for a single state whether we're going to have the same kind of like waiting game for days and days and days to hear what actually.
Well, I didn't hear whether they are counting the mail-in ballots.
Or when they're counting them. Yeah.
Right. Whether they've been counting them or whether they have to wait till.
Yeah. In Massachusetts, they basically could pre-count them, but they couldn't hit the button to get the totals.
Right.
But at least they could have been processed.
Exactly. So I forget what it is in Georgia.
Yeah. So I don't know what their rules are, but I heard one optimistic view that you might actually get a sense by the end of the night. But
I think
we'll
see. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what's going on here. I think
so locally, like what are the issues you got on the table?
Well, actually, let's just say one other thing here. And I think maybe I'll actually kind of switch to the graphics briefly for this here.
Oh, is this about COVID?
Yeah. You know, the thing is that I just actually updated this today. So
January 5th.
Right. So there was an additional, I mean, previous day there was 40 something additional positive tests. It's 26. One should never be swayed too much by what you see on a single day.
Right.
But you know,
confirmed
another 26, but there was an additional confirmed death in a long-term care facility as of today. So we're up to 111. You know, it had been flatlined at about 100 for 82 days.
Well, it was 99 for a really long time. And then
But it went for when it hit 100, it stayed that way for like over two months or something.
Really?
Yeah. And then it's only been with this latest surge that things have been increasing.
Yeah.
Now, for the mathematically inclined, and I'm not going to get too much into this, but I just want to point out, if you look at the graph of the showing here, at least one person was suggesting that it's growing exponentially. I want to just say that from a mathematician's point of view, that is pretty much straight line linear growth. And to me, I think even though I'm not happy with what the 7-day averages are, the fact that it has such a slope and it's increasing at 20-something original infections recorded per day, but it is not accelerating. So I'm going to give a little bit of a hats off to the public health people for, you know, taking enough steps to make sure that even though it's on the increase and we don't like the rate of increase, it's not accelerating, it's not getting any faster. The goal from now on should be to start lowering that slope.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're going to see any leveling until things really get, the vaccines becomes the reality. So,
that's only 1 month. What does that say at the other end?
This is about November? 45, about a month and a half or so of data here, which is really worth
it. Can you show it from the beginning to see the slope?
I don't have it posted here, no. I'll show you another graph right here now, which is if you just look at the 7-day running averages.
That's what I wanted to see.
Yeah, okay. So what you can see here is that it is absolutely clear that the surge that we are in now is far worse than anything
indoors, we had this spring. Holidays, everything. The weather change, everything.
I think many of us have at least developed some perspective. Mm-hmm. A lot of us lived in absolute dire fear in April.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, most of us don't see this as absolute fear anymore so much.
Really?
As
I don't know.
Serious problem.
I've spoken to some people and they're very concerned.
I think some people are, but you know, you know, people like me aren't going out with rubber gloves, right?
Right, but you've been careful all along.
I mean, careful. Yeah, but the thing is, most of us, almost everybody really is being careful.
True.
Being careful is not the same thing as going into insect fear mode. Yeah, right. Okay. People are being, cautious. And what's driving the surge nowadays.
Oh, I gotta look at the time. Yeah, go ahead.
Tends to be amongst people in their 20s and 30s, though not exclusively.
Yeah.
So anyway, I won't push this too much more here, but I just want to say that there's no getting around that this is still going to be like front and center topic as far as the body politic of Cambridge.
Well, we'll be seeing it now because the holidays were just 10 days ago. So,
yeah, you know, what's going to be interesting, and we haven't seen it yet because the rolling out of the vaccinations has been so recent.
Yeah.
That at some point there will be ways to measure the effect of the vaccine on the general population.
Yeah.
And you'll start to see some sort of leveling. Or for example, if they said, well, the last case of a healthcare worker who got infected was 30 days ago. And I'll say, well, that's amazingly great news when we start hearing data like that.
Right, but we don't even hear that data now, though.
Not going to hear it yet because the thing is, the vaccinations are really new.
No, but even before that, they're not telling us this healthcare worker got. I mean,
they're not giving you specifics like that. But the thing is that if you remember when there was the soldiers' home where there were
absolutely.
You were getting site-specific information.
Oh, well, yeah, because it was one site, absolutely.
Right, you were hearing about certain healthcare facilities where they would say how many people of the staff had become infected.
Very identifiable.
At some point, there is a good likelihood that you'll actually start hearing good stories about
from those kinds of places. That would be a good test. Right, that's true.
Or we will maybe hear from public safety people because they're also pretty early in the rollout, that we haven't had a single infection amongst police officers in X number of days. I think people are going to be pretty hungry for that kind of good news.
Yes.
And I suspect it will be coming pretty soon. But so the libraries are going to be closed for 3 weeks? Absolutely closed, right?
Well, they're supposed to be closed till the 18th, but it could go beyond.
Yeah, there was some interesting
2 weeks from yesterday.
Yeah, there was some kind of interesting discussion about the schools, the protocols for when schools stay open or don't.
Yeah, that's
stay
a big open. Issue. Yep.
And it seems like there is a lot of pressure being levied at the city council level to kind of modify.
It's a policy order, but they'd actually talked about it a lot during the COVID, so they didn't even talk about it.
And again, like restaurants and gyms and whatever, being more site specific and detailed, I think is exactly the way to go.
And testing, in terms of these, some kind of testing protocol.
Right. But broad brush prohibitions as opposed to site specific prohibitions is really, I think, the way to go.
So. All right. We've got a few seconds left.
And we're going to come back. We'll be back on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye. See you then.